We are the last of those who gave you breath and form millions of years ago. We are the last of those your kind defied and ruthlessly destroyed. We are the last precursors, and now we are Legion, the Primordial.
He has scoured the realms and unearthed all manuscripts. Unfurled every scroll. Studied the manifestos. Unlatched every grimoire across the scape. He has cracked every tome. He is Vitiligo. And this is Cracking the Tome.
Yes, welcome, scholars, adventurers, and casual lore readers of the like. I am your lore master, Vitiligo, Twitch streamer, host of this podcast, and lover of all things gaming. Welcome to the marquee episode of Cracking the Tome. Thank you. All right, enough of that. Once again, and as always, thank you so much for checking out the podcast. So I decided to start with Halo because it's one of my favorite IPs out there and one that I understand probably the least. And as I come to find out, there's so much content to it. There's so much backstory that I really had no idea how little understanding of it to begin with I really did have. And because of that, I'm sure I'm going to kind of slightly miss some stuff and mix up some stuff along the way, but probably not too bad and small chance of not happening at all. So if I do, please feel free to let me know. I have plans to release correction episodes for stuff that I still don't understand correctly, which, to be honest, I'm human. It's going to happen. Following that, everything is planned to be completely accurate. So, without further ado, let's get cracking. So, this all starts with the Precursors. Very little is known about them. They came from outside the Milky Way billions of years ago, but nobody knows from where or when exactly, or when they even came into existence. About 15 million years ago, they started seeding the galaxy with life, and they seeded millions upon millions of worlds. So all the sentient life around the galaxy was made by the precursors. It was basically offsprings of the precursors. Precursors don't have any specific form that they look like. They kind of mold their form based off of the necessities of what they need. And how they would do that is they would basically degenerate into a powder and become reborn into the frame that they needed. And by frame, I mean that very loosely, as in they sometimes didn't even have bodies. Or more ethereal, kind of immaterial type of forms if they even needed to be. So these two things, along with a bunch of other stuff, is why they're basically looked at as the gods in the universe. And why they have had many races basically worship them over time. So their entire existence revolved around the mantle of responsibility, which is basically the guardianship of all life. So they just kind of protect life and make sure nothing gets out of balance and nothing really falls out of place. And I believe it was their original plan at some point to pass off the mantle of responsibility to one of the races they created and whichever one was best suited for it. Then they would probably move on to another galaxy and start over again. All of their technology was based on neural physics, which was centered around the idea that everything is connected and the universe is a living thing, but still far too complicated for even them to get close to understanding. But having this understanding of this technology, they could manipulate things at the root level of the universe, which made all the precursor artifacts and buildings and architecture basically indestructible. And they are scattered everywhere around the galaxy. So another reason they were looked at as gods. So a few of the things that they built beyond just their basic architecture laying around planets on the galaxy were things called star roads or orbital bridges. And they're theorized to assume that they were made for either moving planets or just moving in between planets. Along with that, there was something called the Organon, which is what the Forerunners called it. And it was basically a mythical precursor artifact that nobody really believed existed. And what it did was it was a network that documented the lives of all living beings across the galaxy and stored it basically in a structure that could be accessed from anywhere in the galaxy. So basically, it was a hard drive that stored every single piece of information of any living thing ever since the beginning of life in the Milky Way, which is insane and impressive. But other than those two things and all the architecture around the galaxy, there really isn't anything else that was left by the precursors except the life that they created. As far as precursor lifestyles go, there isn't much information out there, but we do know that their race had cycles of technology and culture like normal races do in the large scale, apparently. And they would have times of high technology and then extreme remote living and cycle back and forth organically between those countless amounts of time. And also the personal preference to the precursor played a large role. Some enjoyed living very remotely. Some enjoyed living with the society. Just kind of, they were everywhere and didn't really fit a mold. They just kind of lived how they pleased. And if they wanted to change it up, they did. So when it came time to decide who would get the mantle of responsibility, the precursors were originally planning to give it to the Forerunners. But instead, they decided to choose a small race on a planet called Erda Tyrene. And that race is called, you guessed it, humans. Yes, and the Forerunners did not like that at all. And this is what begins the Precursor Forerunner War and the extinction of the Precursors as we know them. If you don't know who the Forerunners are, I'll get to explaining them in depth in a little bit. But for right now, all you need to know is that they are the most highly advanced technological race of the sentient beings that the Precursors have made by quite a long shot at this point. So before I really get into the details of this war, I have to let you know that not much information on this is very clear whatsoever, because all documentation of this in Forerunner records had basically been wiped because of the shame that they faced by basically annihilating their own creators. So we do know that it happened 10 million years ago. So the Forerunners say that they found out that the Precursors were planning to eliminate them as a race. However, the Primordial says that the Forerunners were completely unprovoked in their decision to annihilate the Precursors. I will get into who the Primordial is a little bit later on as well. But right now, I'll say he is the last original Precursor alive. So the Precursors didn't even really fight back. They more or less just marveled in the fact that something that they created could wield such power and be so brutal to the people that created them. After the Forerunners destroyed a majority of the Precursors in the galaxy, they ran to a place called Pathkathona, which is a satellite galaxy off of the Milky Way a little bit. So it's actually a real place as well in life. It's called the Large Magellanic Cloud. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, and sorry if I'm not. But they basically drove them there and then followed them there to make sure that they stayed extinct. The Forerunners led a extremely large fleet of ships over to Pathkathona to basically never come back after they genocided the precursors. When that happened, as I said, they didn't really fight back. Some of the precursors decided to go back to their original form as kind of a peace treaty type thing. So they turned into their dust type thing, and then they just laid dormant for millions and millions of years. And they put some of this dust on ships and sent them away. This is a very important detail in the entirety of Halo. During this genocide, there was a lot of pushback from people in the Forerunner community and society that didn't want to take part in it. And what the Forerunners did was either execute them or they sent them to Path Cathona, where the precursors were, and sent them on a planet that was engineered to hold Forerunners. And they just kind of left them there. And that's basically all we know about the Precursor Forerunner War. And nothing else really happens for the next 10 million years until we get about to 150 to 110,000 years ago. And this is when the humans start coming into play, which is one thing after playing all the Halo games countless times, I never really realized that humanity was a highly technological spacefaring society 1.1 million years ago and didn't become really a prominent race in the galaxy until about 150,000 years ago, which after reading in all the history seems like a really important detail, so just goes to show you how observant I am. So prehistoric humanity is what they are referred to in the context. But for right now, I'm going to go ahead and explain the Forerunners first. Forerunners are a humanoid race that is the most technological race in the galaxy, but not too far behind are the humans and the Sand Shun. They originated on a planet called Gibalb in the Orion Complex. It ended up being destroyed by the Forerunners through a series of galactic interstellar experiments that went awry. At the time of the Human Forerunner War, they had occupied about 3 million worlds across the galaxy. Their race consisted of basically subspecies of Forerunners called Wraiths. To achieve these Wraiths, they manipulate the genetics of the Forerunner to best suit the position that they are going to be in. So with the technical jobs, they make you smarter, and with the physical jobs, they make you stronger. It is more or less a Reader's Digest version of it. The Wraiths consist of Builder, Promethean, Warrior Servant, Juridicals, Theoreticals, Life Shaper, and Miner. So those who have played the game, Promethean is a very common, familiar term. That is the class that the Didact was, and the Life Shaper is the one that the Librarian was in. If you've only played the games, those are about the only two that you would recognize. Wraiths in Forerunner society, depending on what was going on in society and what their main goals were, they put different Wraiths in charge of the Forerunner Ecumene. For instance, if they were at war, the Prometheans would be in charge, and if when they were building the Halos, the Builders would be in charge. These Wraiths weren't necessarily permanent, as the common Forerunner would have multiple Wraiths throughout their life. Their entire society, as previously stated, revolved around the concept that they were in charge of the mantle. But they actually used that more or less as a way to make sure that no other race were able to rise up against them. Which leads us back to the Human Forerunner War. The humans had a long-standing alliance with the Sand Shun, which if you have played the games, you remember those creepy-looking things with the really long necks that look really old, the prophets? Yeah, those are the Sand Shun. So with their long-standing alliance with them, they started studying precursor artifacts, collecting them, and ended up making technology that was rivaling the Forerunners. Throw in the fact that the humans told the Forerunners that they believed they were the true reclaimers of the mantle instead of them, which made the Forerunners not like the humans very much. The Forerunners actually highly respected the human race as far as a military opponent. They were already respected politically and economically throughout the galaxy, as they had occupied about 20,000 or so worlds around the Orion Complex. This war lasted about 1,000 years before the Forerunners finally won the war and basically genetically exiled the humans to a previous state. What they ended up doing was making the humans go backwards, so de-evolutionize into multiple various rates, kind of like the Forerunners. So they dumbed them down and then stuck them back on Heir to Tyrene, Earth, and then they left them there. However, while this war was going on, the humans and the Sanchum were battling the Flood on the opposite side of their territory, which is something that the Forerunners had no idea about whatsoever. The Flood first arrived as unmanned cargo ships that came from outside the galaxy, Path Kathona. And they found these ships full of millions of these cylinders of just powder. So remember back when I said that during the Forerunner Precursor War, some of the Precursors degenerated themselves into powder. This is that powder. Except over time, it became tainted and sick, more or less. And all of this powder made a vow to never have anything it's created rise up against it again. Therefore, all life would be nothing but suffering and pain in the galaxy. Thus created the Flood. And they ran a bunch of tests, every single test that they could figure out, and they couldn't find any purpose or disadvantage to it. It was basically useless, and it was nothing more than lifeless, short-chained, organic molecules. They did, however, find out that it did affect their pets. It made them easier to train, more intelligent, and there were some cosmetic features to them that were very desired for the owners. However, soon it started to change, and the Furu, which are the pets that they were using it on, they started to change as well. Not for the better. So at first it was just a little scruffy patch of hair on the back of their neck that would fall off. Then they started to grow kind of tumor-like things on the back of their neck and other parts of their body. And then the other Furu would eat these parts and the other Furu with them on it. And the Furu that were like this began infecting other Furu. After that started going for a while, it started spreading to the humans and the Sanchum as well. So by the time they figured it out, it was too late and they'd already lost multiple worlds to the infection. So the humans started running from the infection, even going to worlds that were already inhabited and taking them over for their own. Along with going where they weren't wanted and forcing themselves in, they were also trying to sterilize the Flood as it was expanding, which resulted in them devastating multiple Forerunner worlds as well. This, in turn, is really what started the human Forerunner War, was them just trying to escape and sterilize the Flood, which turns out to be the biggest mistake by the Forerunners they ever made. Well, other than killing the Precursors off to begin with, but the Forerunners also did not consider the Flood to be a threat really whatsoever, at least until it really started to blow up. So 40 years before the end of the war, the humans found a stasis pod floating outside the edge of the galaxy. In the stasis pod was the Primordial, which is the last precursor alive. The stasis pod prevented it from aging or wearing down or anything, really. It just completely protected it from everything. So the humans brought it back to Cherim Hakor, which was their capital at the time and where they were holding all of the other precursor artifacts. They locked it up and started questioning it, try and learn more about the Flood. The answers they got, however, were less than ideal. In fact, it was so traumatizing that some just straight up committed suicide other than live with the knowledge. Which really makes you wonder what he said, because the way I interpreted it is that he just basically was like, yeah, the Flood is us, and Flood is going to consume all life, it's going to torment you, and you're going to be in constant pain until you get shot up by Master Chief. Like, that's brutal. So I guess I can kind of understand how some people would just take the easy way out. So this led humanity into going into overdrive to try and combat the flood. So what they did was they took about a third of their population and genetically altered them, then sent them to where the flood was and let them get infected by the flood. Then the new genes would effectively, aggressively kill off the flood, and that is what made them retreat. So humanity basically found a cure to the flood, or so they thought. Down the road, when the Didact talks to the Primordial, it is found out that humanity never found a cure. The flood just decided to pull back to make it look like humanity found a cure so that the Forerunners would keep going after humanity and trying to figure out what the cure was instead of trying to combat them other ways. So it was literally a strategic retreat. So after that, the flood left and humanity's population was already devastated by at least a third of the total populace. So being devastated by the flood already, humanity and the Sanshum lost the war to the Forerunners, and the Sanshum got basically locked on their own homeworld without the genetic deterioration, and humans got locked on their own homeworld with genetic deterioration because they were looked at as more of a threat. And the only real reason they were saved is because of the Librarian. They were going to be annihilated as a species entirely, but the Librarian convinced the Council to spare them. And the Librarian is the head life shaper, and their job is to experiment with new life, protect all life, and care for all life, basically. So they're the ones who are basically the embodiment of the Mantle. They take it to heart. So while the flood was retreating, it was still very present, and it was something that the Forerunners started to get concerned about because it started to attack Forerunner worlds and attack the fleets that the Forerunners were using in the war. That's when they started to take the flood seriously, and that's another reason why they kept the humans alive, is to question them, because it seemingly was that they had developed a cure of some sort. The real red flag came up when the Didact took over Cherim Hakur and questioned the Primordial and found out that they were the precursors, just sickened and out to destroy all life in the galaxy. So by the quote, "We are the last precursors and our answer is at hand," basically told them that the flood was going to come back. They didn't know when. They didn't know how, but they knew the flood was going to come back and they were going to have to face a very, very serious issue. So now is when we get into the actual Halos. So the Forerunner Ecumene and the Council and all the leaders started to debate on how to best combat this oncoming issue. There were a bunch of ideas passed around, but none of them really good except for the Didact's shield worlds and the Master Builder's Halos. The shield worlds were about exactly what they sound like. They were designed to kind of make a barrier that the flood couldn't penetrate. With extreme military presence and other defensive strategies, it would basically be a safe zone, more or less, which was a good alternative to sterilizing the entire galaxy. So of the 1,000 designed to take place, only 673 got built. And ultimately, the plan got shot down anyway, and the Didact got put in a cryptum, which is basically a living death, deep sleep coma type thing, that they did because he wouldn't stop pressing the Council for the shield worlds instead of the Halo Array, which they were more in favor of, strictly as a last case scenario situation. When they started building these, they originally planned to have 12, and they made 12, and they constructed the arcs to build the halos and also act as a safe haven for species across the galaxy, kind of like Noah's Ark, where they put just enough of the species on to maintain life. So while completely going against the Mantle, they're still preserving the Mantle when every single life in the galaxy gets destroyed. The arcs were set outside the galaxy and outside of crossfire of the Halo Array. It's also the place that the Halo Array can be fired from. There were actually two arcs, and one's called the Greater Arc and one's called the Lesser Arc. The Greater Arc was producing halos that were 30,000 kilometers across, and the Lesser Arc produced the one that was 10,000 kilometers across. The halos themselves targeted neurophysics, which was the type of technology that the precursors used, and doing so would target all life organisms, and it would basically starve out the Flood to where they died themselves. So they were strategically placed all around the galaxy to where it would cover all of the area in the galaxy that had sentient life. One of the halos was test-fired by the Master Builder without Council approval on Cherim Hakur and the Sanshum homeworld. By doing that, it did destroy all precursor artifacts on Cherim Hakur that the humans had acquired. Even the structure that was keeping the Primordial prisoner. So he ended up being freed when the test fire happened. While he was there, though, the Master Builder put a Contender-class Ancilla. Now, Ancilla is something I forgot to mention before, and it is basically the Forerunner version of the AIs from Halo. So, basically a really, really powerful Cortana. So, this AI was sent to interrogate the Primordial for years. And in that time, the Primordial, being basically a god, turned the AI on its own masters. It converted the AI to think like the Primordial and do its own bidding. So the AI, whose name is Mendicant Bias, the Primordial, and Installation 07, which was the Halo Ring test fired in the Cherim Hakur system, all disappeared for 43 years. As you know if you've played the games, the Halo Rings also are kind of ecosystems of their own. Depending where they are on the ring, they have different climates, different terrains, different species living there. And what the Primordial did on Installation 07, there were human populations there, the prehistoric humans, the ones that were degraded, and he basically started culminating them into one place to start creating more Flood. So after the Forerunner Council found out about the unapproved test fire on Cherim Hakur and the Sanshum homeworld, they brought the Master Builder to trial and all the rest of the rings to the capital system to possibly be decommissioned. While the trial had just started, Mendicant Bias, the AI, returned with the missing Halo Ring to the capital system with plans to take over all the other Halo Rings and destroy the Forerunner capital system. He was only able to take control of 5 of the rings, and the other 7 were able to escape through slipspace portals. The slipspace portal led to the Greater Arc, and only one of the 7 installations that went there made it there without any damage. Back on the Forerunner capital world, between the defenses and the slipspace portal disruption and whatnot, and everything else that was going on, only one Halo was able to fire in the system, and it didn't even fire correctly, so it basically devastated the planet, but not bad enough to where it killed all sentient life. So there were still some survivors from the battle on the capital. I should add that part of the defenses for the Halos are those robotic floating sentinels that shoot the lasers. If you played the games, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you haven't, there's not much more information on them. A lot of the Forerunners in the galaxy moved to the Greater Arc as kind of a safe haven against what was happening outside, or inside the galaxy, which basically was the Flood was taking control of entire systems, entire fleets of Forerunner starships, and just completely started to overtake everything. The Flood returned on a planet called Seaward. This planet is towards the edge of the galaxy and is not known by many Forerunners. It was kind of a secret retreat for the lavishly rich. Wasn't highly visited, was left alone a lot. High technology, high luxury. I imagine this as basically Epstein's Island, but without the pedophilia. So honestly, the perfect place for Flood Round 2 to start. As you know, the Flood takes over the body of the victim, and therefore it takes all of its memories and its intelligence over with it as well. They can start merging all of these organisms that they've taken over together to create stronger, smarter Flood creatures. So these planets that got taken over, they would turn into things called key mines. And these key mines were strong enough that they were able to control the Flood interstellarly. Because the whole Flood is a hive mind. Not all precursors were a hive mind, and the prehistoric precursors were not hive minds, but all Flood, after they turned vile and got sick, they are all one mind now. And things like hive minds and grave minds are able to control them and act as their one voice for strategy. They become extremely intelligent when this happens. Key minds are more intelligent than any AI that the Forerunners ever developed. And since they can control Flood multiple star systems away, it makes them extremely dangerous. Grave minds are the same. That might be a term that you're more familiar with if you've played the games. And they're just another culmination of a bunch of bodies until they get enough intelligence to make the actual grave mind. But they're more able to control the Flood locally instead of being multiple star systems away and still being able to control them. The Primordial is what you would consider a grave mind. So that's a good example if you needed one. A good example of a key mind is something the size of Antarctica on our planet and as tall as Everest, being a highly sentient Flood thing. So eventually the Didact was able to overtake Installation 07, which is where the Primordial and Menachem Bias was, and he was able to imprison the Precursor again. He put him in this time lock chamber that made the Primordial go through billions of years of aging until it was nothing more than dust, as this was the only sure way to kill it. However, before he did that, they were able to have a conversation. And this is where he finds out that the humans are the ones who are made to inherit the mantle, not the precursors. He also finds out that the humans never found a cure for the Flood, that the Flood just did the tactical retreat to make it look like the humans found a cure to confuse the Forerunners and make them waste time trying to figure out a cure instead of preparing defenses or figure out any other way that would defeat the Flood. Which is, of course, insanely intelligent, but, you know, eternal beings and whatnot. Before he died, the Primordial said, "Humans will rise again in arrogance and defiance. The Flood will return when they are ripe and bring them unity." And then later again says, "Misery is sweetness. Forerunners will fail as you have failed before. Humans will rise. Whether they will also fail has not been decided." Which is foreshadowing all of the Halo games and everything current in the universe. At the end, though, I love this quote. After the Didact kills the Primordial, the line says, "The Didact knelt and pounded his great fist on the pathway. It is never easy to judge and execute a god." I just love that line. So back to the Forerunners on the Ark. To make room on the Ark for the incoming Forerunners, a lot of the species that were kept there to keep safe from the Halo Array, if it ever fired, were sent to the Omega Halo, which was one of the halos built at the Greater Ark, after all of the Forerunners had gone there. So while they were at the Greater Ark, they repaired all the halos and then built this one as well. This one fired differently than all the others, though. It was designed to just have a singular, more so, path of destruction compared to the other ones, which kind of did an all-around type of fire. It was pointed at Path Kathona to make sure, just in case there was any Flood or precursors out there, that it would destroy all sentient life out there as well, because they know by now that that's where the precursors came from. That's where they were hiding back when they first had the Forerunner Precursor War. They are certain of this because the Librarian took a small expedition out there to find out if there was anything to find out, really. When they went out there, they found an extremely large fleet of Forerunner ships, not prehistoric, but very, very old, like back, you know, 10 million years ago, ships that didn't even run on the same technology, not even close. They said that it ran on code and data. So the type of technology that we have now, which is completely barbaric compared to what they have now. And all of these ships were basically sent here on a one-way mission to never return, either because they didn't have the technology to return and it was just a one-way trip, or they just couldn't return to a normal life after doing what they did, as it is never easy to judge and kill a god. when they went out there, that's when they discovered that there were other Forerunners left out there or made to go out there because they were against the extermination of the Precursors. So there was one planet out there that had life on it, and they go and they find Forerunners, but they're not real Forerunners like the Forerunners are now. They're altered. They've evolved to adapt on the planet in actually a bunch of different ways. Like when they land on this planet, the first thing they see is a animal like dog, cow, deer thing that has the face of a Forerunner. So they evolved in different ways and kind of like the Forerunners now have subspecies. But the ones that were still closest to the Forerunners were still in touch with certain characteristics of the normal Forerunners. And they communicated with them and learned that they basically have their own attachment to the domain, which was, if you remember, their more or less internet that reached all around the galaxy and to Pathkathona as well, that had a history of all living things ever. And this attachment to the domain was a crevice or a crater or a ravine, more or less, that had these microorganisms, this bacteria, that would allow you to access the information of the domain through their own way of presenting the information. So that's when they were able to figure out that the Precursors ran there, they went there, destroyed them, and these guys were left there. So that's how they know for sure that all this happened that way. So while this is happening, back in the Orion Complex, which is the main Forerunner society, the Flood continues to grow, continues to get stronger and more powerful, and they start reactivating a bunch of Precursor artifacts and weapons, technology, whatnot, to better help them in the war as well. So it's really getting bad back in the homeland. The Flood, led by Mendicant Bias, finally makes its way out to the Greater Ark with a giant fleet and lays an attack on the Greater Ark and the Forerunners there. The Didact then starts taking humans and, using the Composer, changes them to Promethean soldiers. These soldiers, if you played Halo 4 or 5, I think, they are the mechanical suits of armor you're fighting the whole time. And he was changing them into these machines so there was no risk of Flood infection. And the Composer is basically just that. It's a machine that transfers living organisms into machines. So it transfers their sentience into the machine body. So since they know they have to save the humans because they're the true reclaimers of the mantle, so they take the remaining humans to the Lesser Ark to keep them safe from the inevitable firing of the Halo Array. At this time, the Lesser Ark is the place where all the other six Halos are right now. Then the Omega Halo is at the Greater Ark. So right now might be a good time to say that there are actually two Didacts. One is the original, and the other is basically a copy. So when these Forerunners change rates, they need somebody to graph the rate off of. And doing so takes all the memories and thoughts of the one being graphed off of and puts them into the one being graphed on. It was basically two, and the original one got brainwashed by the Gravemind and now wants to eradicate all other species that could have a chance of rising up against the Forerunners again. So he's evil now. The second one is now more or less the healthy version of the Didact. So the sick Didact, the original one, got taken to Requiem and got placed in a cryptum so he wouldn't be able to use this Promethean army against all the other sentient life out there or screw up the firing of the Halo Array. The second Didact goes on to the Lesser Ark to activate the Halo Rings. Now, I didn't bring this up before because I didn't think I would have to, because it gets really confusing trying to keep up which one is which. And in the books, they talk about the second one like the first one, to a point where they try to charge the second one with crimes committed by the first one. And the only difference in the names is the Didact and the Isodidact. And it just, I was confused for a majority part of the books, and I just thought it was easier to just call it the Didact while I was doing this synopsis to make it easier for you guys as well. But if you do plan on reading the books, it is important to know the difference between the two. So before the Didact on the Greater Ark leaves, the second one, the good one, they fire the Halo there and it destroys a bunch of Precursor artifacts and star roads around the Greater Ark and the Halo there. And those star roads crash into the Greater Ark and the Halo and destroy both of them. So the second Didact gets saved and taken to the Lesser Ark, where they start making preparations to send the rings out to their respective strategic points around the galaxy to make sure that the Halo Array covers all space in the galaxy. While he's doing this, the Librarian creates a diversion and starts going to Earth to make the Flood follow her there so the Didact has enough time to activate the Halo Rings. This works. Mendicant Bias's fleet of Flood finally show up. The Didact combats them with his own Contender-class AI called Offensive Bias. So they basically just defend as long as they can until the Didact is ready to activate the Halo Rings. And then the Didact activates the Halo Rings and kills off everything in the galaxy. Not exactly everything, though, as there are still humans and other species on the Lesser Ark. After some time, the humans are eventually transported back to Earth to survive and start over. All of this ends about exactly 100,000 years from the dates of Halo Combat Evolved. Nothing else happens for a really long time, and a lot of this Forerunner trilogy story is more or less a standalone by itself. So this is where I'm going to end the episode. I'm going to try to keep episodes between a half an hour and 45 minutes, but if there's more information that I need to put in an episode, I'm going to obviously make it longer. But there's also the other side of that, where if I can't find enough good information to put in, I'm not just going to fill the void in time with random crap. So depending on what I'm doing and the breaks in the episodes are going to be the factors that determine how long the episodes are. But if I can't find something to make at least a 20-25 minute episode, I probably won't even do it. Or I'll just hold off on that and save it for when I have a Patreon or something able for you guys to access bonus materials if you wanted to. But that's also down the road a bit. So a lot of this information from this podcast I got from the Forerunner trilogy. I've mentioned it before, and I highly recommend reading it. It's something that I really want to read again sometime in the future. I tried to keep out a lot of unnecessary information from it, so if you did want to go and read those three books, it wouldn't feel like you already know what's happened by listening to this episode. And if you have already read the books, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I really tried to not spoil unnecessary stuff. So other than that, that's the episode. If you're still listening, thank you so much. I promise it's only going to get better from here. I know it was a little choppy and a little stammery, but that's going to go away with experience. If you like what you hear and you want to help us grow, please, you know what to do. Like, comment, share, tell your friends, tell your family, tell that cashier you see every other Wednesday, anybody you can think of that would enjoy this. Word of mouth is better advertising than anything I can do online. If you want to get a hold of me for any reason, just to chat, ask questions, tell me what I screwed up on, I am on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and most importantly, Twitch. And my name on all those is Vitilago. That's V-I-T-I-L-A-G-O. V-I-T-I-L-A-G-O. Thank you again for listening. Stay awesome, and Godspeed. Pedophilia.